Hey, it's Buster Olney of the Baseball Tonight podcast. With ESPN Daily, you can wake up to the best story you'll hear all day. 20 minutes a day, 5 days a week, where you get an inside look at the most interesting stories at ESPN. It's told by the top reporters and insider on the planet. Plus, Mina Kimes does such a great job with it. The breaking news of SportsCenter with a deep dive storytelling of 30 for 30. Today's episode is one I thought our listeners would especially enjoy. Please listen and subscribe to ESPN Daily wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
The one thing I know for sure is baseball will be back. Whenever it's safe to play, we'll be back. Our fans will be back. Our players will be back. And we will be part of the recovery, the healing in this country from this particular pandemic.
That's MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred, promising us that baseball will return. Until then, the league and its players now have a working deal in place to settle issues like service time and player pay. But behind the labor piece, storm clouds are gathering for the future of the sport. Today, Jeff Passan talks to Cincinnati Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer about what's right and wrong with the relationship between the league and its players, and how baseball could use this opportunity to come booming back. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Monday, March 30th. This is ESPN Daily. Today, we've got another firsthand look at how the sports shutdown is affecting Major League Baseball from ESPN senior baseball insider Jeff Passan. As part of this series, Jeff caught up with Reds pitcher Trevor Bauer just a few hours after the league and its players association reached a deal. Here's Jeff.
This is recording.
I'm recording, so that's good. Do we need to clap or something?
Hold on. Would you like to clap just to make it feel like a real audio thing? One.
I got you.
Two,
I beat you to it.
Three. Go.
Only one of us has to clap, I think, right?
I don't know how it works. Trevor, as a player, what have the last few weeks been like for you?
It's been very odd. The most odd time of my probably baseball career in general. At no point in baseball, in my baseball history, have I not known when season was or when the off season was. There's always dates. So it's, okay, season ends October 1st this year, unless we make playoffs. So spring training is going to start on the 13th, or our report date's the 15th, or whatever it is, right? So you have these brackets of I can train, and then I can play, and then I can take some time off or not, and then train and play. So this is a very routine throughout the year type of thing. Now it was, we were playing, we were getting ready to play, and then all of a sudden it cut off, and now we don't know if we're training, if we're taking time off, if we're playing. So then it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll just jump right back into training and just maintaining because I was ready for season. So do I just try to maintain being ready for season? But I might be maintaining for 3 or 4 months. Who knows? If I'm in the middle of a strength phase, I can't prioritize throwing. I have to prioritize lifting over throwing. And so then the throwing falls back a little bit. So if in the middle of the strength phase, let's say I'm on week 3 of it, my body's crushed, then we get, hey, it's 2 weeks till season, let's go. And I'm like, well, now I'm not going to be ready for the start of that season. So it's just a very odd time. It's very hard to plan out.
Where were you when you heard the news that the baseball season was being postponed?
Well, it rained for three consecutive days here in Arizona. So I was at the field on Thursday. I was supposed to pitch on Friday, but I hadn't gotten to throw a bullpen or anything. So I was in the cage throwing a very light bullpen, came into the clubhouse, and everyone said, hey, we're going to have a meeting at noon. It was 11:40. I was like, okay. And everyone started kind of, the rumors were out there. And then, you know, a decision came down and we had a discussion about it for about an hour. And I was like, okay, well, do I pack my stuff up? Do I not? I don't know. And so that was that.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Arizona. I'm still at the house that we were renting. We had our lease through middle of next month. So we're staying here at least for the next couple weeks until we figure out are we going to be able to travel back home? Is that not safe?
Have you heard from other players how they're trying to pass their time right now?
Yeah, some guys are playing video games a lot. I know that's a big thing, the MLB The Show tournaments that are kind of getting passed around and whatnot. Some guys are trying to train, you know, trying to at least stay in throwing shape. So they're looking for guys to play catch with. It's really dependent on what guys do in the offseason. I know like Lorenzen is doing his Instagram Live three times a week at his home gym. So he's back in the gym training, but he has a gym at his house, so he can do that. I've had to find a gym here in Arizona to go train at. I know some guys, like I see Amir Garrett, and he's playing video games all, you know, all day, and guys are just handling it differently.
I would love to play video games all day.
I did in college, and then I almost failed out of college and I said no more.
So no video games, but you've done almost daily posts on YouTube, and that's part of the media company you've started in addition to your baseball career. Also, you've spent a lot of time on the phone recently because shutting down the season raised all kinds of questions that had to be hammered out between players and the league. And, you know, both sides preferred to settle this on their own rather than be out there in public fighting about millionaires and billionaires making money during this terrible humanitarian crisis. And so a labor deal got done on Friday. Some of the big bullet points. The draft is going to be shortened. We don't know how short, but it could be as few as five rounds. Guaranteed money, $170 million to the players up front, no matter what the season winds up looking like. If it's canceled, they get to keep the money. Guaranteed service time to players, even in the event that the season is canceled, so you still get the time counted toward your contracts or your contract expiring. And in your case, that's really important because you are set to be a free agent. What do you make of the deal generally? And are you as a player happy with how it turned out?
I haven't read all the deal points yet. So it's hard for me to speak super strongly on it without having seen everything that actually finally got agreed to. But also the bargaining cycle that's coming up in 2021, this is kind of a brief interlude maybe, or, you know, there's that backdrop of it. There's the very real possibility that we don't play this year. And so then how does that affect next year? Let's just say as doomsday scenario, this season's canceled. So this season's canceled, players don't get paid. Owners lose a lot of money. The industry, you know, fans lose out on baseball, all that bad stuff, right? Next year, you would assume there'd be a normal regular season. But owners are not going to be doling out a bunch of money in free agency and paying for players and whatnot. You'll see more service time manipulation. You'll see more, you know, guys sitting out halfway through the season until a team knows exactly what they need and is willing to spend money. You'll see a lot of this stuff, right? And then that's going to cause angst between the players and the league going into a bargaining cycle.
The deal that the union and the league struck, what do you think was the single biggest win for the players?
I mean, I think the answer you're expecting is service time, I would guess.
I think that would be a self-serving answer because the year of service time, because you are set to be a free agent after this year, protects you regardless. Like, you are going to be a free agent in November now.
Yeah, in a way, right? But there's other ways where it doesn't necessarily. So I had a subpar 2019 for sure. And so I'm a free agent. Let's say I'm a free agent after this year with no baseball. You know, am I evaluated based on my 2019? Like, that was an outlier year. I'm not that bad of a pitcher. I'm probably not as good as 2018, but I'm somewhere in between. But now I'm going to be evaluated 2 years based on 1 year. Now, I know I'm just one case, right? I could be an outlier. I could be the norm. I don't know. It's hard for me to say what the single biggest win is. I think as an industry, it'd be a huge win if we could get baseball this year, period.
Considering negotiations just happened, going into the collective bargaining talks in 2021, what do you expect to see from both sides? What do you feel like the priorities for the players should be, and what do you think the priorities for Major League Baseball are going to be?
Oh, man. Do I give you the PC answer? Or do I give you my actual thoughts on this?
Let's go with the actual thoughts.
Let me call a timeout and call my team and see what I should do here.
Did you just say call my team?
Yeah, let me time out. I need a 30 second timeout here. Let's start on MLB's side. I think MLB has it pretty good right now. They have found a way to operate within the... Okay, let me preface all this by saying, from my perspective, it seems that these are true. Because again, I don't know all the inner workings of every single team and all of MLB and all this different stuff. So I could be very wrong on this, and I realize that, but this is just from my perspective that this is how I perceive things. I think MLB has it pretty good right now because they've found a way in the last couple bargaining agreements to keep certain things in place that allow them to operate the way that they're operating, control players for longer periods of time, and find ways to shrink salary while maintaining output and all this different stuff. So it would seem to me that MLB has a good thing going, so they would want to continue with those things. Now, things that I think could augment their position. They have this situation where you acquire talent relatively cheaply, at least compared to what it used to be. And then you can control that talent for a long time. You can get damn near 7 years of service time out of the player. Like, for instance, I only need 2 weeks to be a free agent. So I'll play 6 years and 52 days or whatever before I'm a free agent. So basically 7 years. And so then you would have to pay players in free agency. Well, teams have now figured out that we have algorithms that can predict what we think your performance is going to be. So they're no longer paying for what a player has done. They're paying for what a player is projected to do. On the player side, we need to unravel some of those things. Mainly the competitive balance of the league. You know, it'd be great if teams, you know, 1 through 20 or 1 through 24 were all pretty competitive and had a chance to make the playoffs. That's more interesting for baseball and for baseball fans, so, and for the players. You gotta find a way to get players paid more earlier in their, like, paid more true market value earlier in their career. So that you don't have a player that puts up, you know, really good numbers for 5 years, has a somewhat down sixth year because of, well, maybe he's putting a lot of pressure on himself or something, and then goes into free agency and gets a 1 year deal. Yeah, that's my read on things.
Coming up, Jeff asks Trevor, when baseball does come back, what's the best way to grow the league?
How realistic do you think the possibility of there being no baseball this year is?
I mean, I would put it in the teens, maybe, percentage-wise. I think baseball as a whole, as an industry, has long since been that kind of, obviously, America's pastime. But if you look at how, you know, 9/11 happened, and baseball was the first sport that got back and was kind of giving people an escape from some of the things that happened, and that's very much on the minds of everybody in the industry right now, is let's get back and give people something to watch. Like, we're the sport that's supposed to be going on right now, that's leading into, you know, we're the summer sport, we're the only one, so let's get back and play. So I think the chances of no baseball are pretty low. Now, how much baseball and when, I have no idea, but I think there will be some baseball.
What can baseball do if it's the first sport back to really take advantage of that?
Man, this is back to my rant about baseball industry in general. There's a huge opportunity here to have baseball be the only thing that people are watching, but you can't be the only thing people are watching if people can't watch your sport. So that's the first thing. Like, the first thing baseball needs to do is make sure that everybody can watch their product. That's tricky right now because of all the blackouts, paying for MLB TV, not being able to watch your hometown team. Maybe you don't have the cable provider that you need to have in LA, or, you know, Canada can't watch the Blue Jays now, or, you know, whatever the case, all these deals that have been struck that people can't watch the product.
Make it free. Like, make the first month of baseball completely free for the country to watch. Get them hooked.
Or just make it like, hey, download this free app and watch baseball all you want, but there's going to be ads on it. And there's going to be like whatever, you know, like there's other ways to make money without having to charge people for the product itself. Or you can charge them for the product itself, you know, but just make it accessible. I mean, there's tons of baseball fans that would pay $150 a year. That's less than $30 a month to watch baseball, because they'd be able to watch their favorite team, but they're not going to pay $150 a year if they can't watch their favorite team on the stupid app. So that's one thing. Make sure that people can watch your product. Another thing is to get your product out on social media a lot, you know, stream games live on the internet, put some VR cameras in the dugout, get creative with the media strategies to try to engage different demographics of fans age-wise. That's another thing they can do.
What do you think of the game in 2020?
I think the game is awesome. I think the game is the most, the fastest, most athletic, most talented game that we've ever had. Think about the athletes that we have right now. Think about like how hard the pitchers are throwing, how nasty their stuff is, and how the hitters are, you know, the spikes and home runs and ability to do damage, and how fast the game is and on defense and all that. Like, if you put a player from the best player from 2000 in today's game, he's probably an average player. But as far as just the skill set, if you just transplanted today or whenever there's baseball, if you just took 2000 Barry Bonds and you put him in 2020, he gets absolutely chewed up. And that's the case with hitters too, or pitchers or fielders or whatever the case is. People are just so much more capable and so much more able today, training-wise too. I mean, training is ridiculously advanced baseball-wise compared to where it was in 2000. But it's still super behind what it could be. I think the game's great.
You don't think it's too slow?
I mean, the game is, you know, some games are slow. Sure. I mean, we sit in the dugout and we're like, oh man, a 3.5 hour game. Great. So I think it could be sped up in some ways, you know, but I think the game is exciting personally. I mean, I think if you know what to watch, I think one of the issues is the education is not there for the fans to understand all the stuff that's going on. You know, if you just see guys striking out a lot, you're like, well, I used to watch baseball 20 years ago and guys didn't strike out. These players suck. You know, if you understand what you're looking at and why, I think it creates a lot of really interesting dynamics that other sports don't necessarily have. You know, football is a physical game, right? And that's very interesting for a lot of people, and that's great, but it doesn't have the depth and dimension that baseball has. Neither does the NBA. You know, baseball is not a physical game, and so it's much more of a chess match, and it's much more of a strategy game in a lot of ways. Sure, it has the physical component of actually doing the skills and whatnot, but it's different than other sports. But I think there's a lot of dimensions to it that people just don't understand, and they don't understand why it's so good. This is one of the things that I'm trying to do with my Breaking Point series on YouTube, is to take fans through a player's perspective on, okay, this is the information that I knew going in. This is what actually happened. This is how I can use knowing that I throw an outlier slider or my fastball sucks or whatever the case is. All right, what's up, guys? No baseball right now, obviously. So this is actually something I'm going to be doing all year, is breaking down some games, letting you know what I was thinking about when I was pitching, and drawing your attention to some techniques of the hitters, things to look for, things to notice. We're going to break down the at-bat I recently had against Matt Beatty. Kind of went viral. Got a lot of attention, so if you haven't checked that out, you'll get to see it. To get a hitter to a certain spot where I want him to get him out, or this is how he set me up to get me out. And so understanding some of all the little things that we're noticing, and how in tune with the flow of the game we are is big. So more of that, I think, is the place to start. More education.
Fans would love that in the moment. And if you talk with people at Major League Baseball, they will say, we want that too. But the players are reticent to do that. Is that a fair criticism, you think? And if so, why are players so hesitant?
I think it's a fair criticism for today. I think it will be less a fair criticism in 2 years and less in five and less in 10. The problem is the culture of baseball needs to grow up and adapt to 2020. From the second players step into pro ball, you're told by people who have been there longer than you, media directors, front offices, coaches, etc., keep your head down. Don't say anything. Talk about the team. Here's the cliches. You know, the scene in Bull Durham that everybody knows, like, hey, you're going to go to the bigs and, you know, say these things, you'll be fine. And whatever that scene is where, you know, Nuke is learning how to, or where Crash is telling Nuke how to handle the big leagues. Like, that is a real thing. That still goes on. Rookies have media training where they go, and learn how to say words without saying anything at all to avoid controversy. Like, these are actual things that go on. So, the more we get away from that, the more players are going to be willing to sit there and do an in-game interview or to do, you know, and to actually speak about what's going on. You know, it needs to be encouraged. But that the individual teams are deathly afraid of that because they haven't educated their players in a way that they can trust their players. Let's say I have an agent, right? I have a PR person or, you know, whatever the case is, someone that's looking out for my brand, right? Rachel does a good job of this. So, like, Rachel doesn't need to prep me to sit here and talk to you today. I can speak candidly about a lot of stuff. I know what subjects I can and can't get into. I know what questions I need to pass on and what I can answer.
So can you give me your best cliche-ridden, PR-approved answer to the question of what should Major League Baseball do to increase its popularity with fans?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that are really smart at the league that are addressing that that exact issue, and it's a complicated one, and, you know, they're doing the best they can to make it a reality.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah. I still know him. I hate him. I almost wanted to, yeah. I almost just slapped myself in the face for saying that, but.
I totally set you up there, didn't I?
Imagine what this interview would be like if that's what I said to all the answers. Like, you wouldn't have called me to do a podcast. You wouldn't have, like, this wouldn't be a thing. Because you would just go to the next guy who's willing to speak like a human.
Got one last question for you. And this is a possibility that has become increasingly likely. What would you think about playing in stadiums with no fans?
I mean, anything to get baseball back on the field. It would be weird for sure. I mean, we rely on the fans for energy and whatnot. But as far as the people that we could help and the people we could entertain, via TV and streaming and stuff like that, the vast majority of people will be watching there anyway. So as soon as possible is preferable.
Amen and hallelujah to that. Preach on, Brother Bauer. Trevor, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Been fun. Always fun talking to you. So hopefully we can do it again soon.
Coming up, China is still waiting for basketball to return, and the world is watching to see how they do it. Here's another story I want you to know. Just last week, We told you guys about how basketball in China, which has been shut down since late January, seemed poised for a mid-April return. But shortly after that, our Brian Windhorst reported that the Chinese Basketball Association's return had been pushed back, possibly until early May, after the league failed to get government approval. While players like Jeremy Lin and Lance Stevenson had been called back to China so they could enter quarantine and prepare to resume playing, Chinese officials were reportedly concerned about risking contamination for players, coaches, and staffers, while also recognizing that the eyes of the world are on them. As Windhorst pointed out in another piece, the NBA and other leagues are watching China to see how and whether they're going to bring basketball back. While there's no public plan in place, Windhorst reports that the CBA is considering clustering their team in one or two cities and having them play the remaining schedule in a round-robin format in empty arenas. They would possibly choose a city with fewer cases of coronavirus or one that has developed an effective quarantine strategy. They'd also make teams and players live in constantly monitored spaces, having their temperatures checked several times a day. And that's where I think this gets tricky, because while it seems inevitable that if the NBA does return, games will initially be played in empty arenas, it's hard to imagine stars like LeBron James, who initially criticized the notion of even playing games without fans, consenting to living in a sort of bubble. But as Windhorst points out, he and other players may not have a choice, because much like everything these days, the new normal in sports probably won't feel normal for a very long time. I'm Mina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.